Hey guys, it's Scott here. Welcome to another episode of the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Before we get to the sponsors and our episode today, we want to announce that we are now part of the BS Podcast Network. It's just a cool network loaded with really interesting podcasts, unique podcasts, and just good content. We're happy to be on them and happy to have them support us. So thank you to the BS Podcast Network for having us on. Now, we got a couple sponsors to get to before we get to our awesome episode today. Now, Susan Robb, one of our sponsors with our program with Kim Ward and Paul Templer, they started the Nepal Outreach Program, and they're really looking for donations. Their goal is to reach $25,000. They've already raised over $5,000. And the goal is to put 15 kids into school and supply 17 ladies and moms with sewing material to make these beautiful quilts that they will try to sell in order to help keep these kids in school and give these women a way to make a living. Okay, so it's a really good cause. They've sold over 10 of these quilts in 5 different countries, so they are well on their way. Kim Ward, the executive director of the Templer Foundation, which is a not-for-profit 501c3, they want to secure a house for these 15 women and enroll all 17 kids into school this year. So Kim and Susan are working tirelessly. They're good people. They help us with the show here. So please go make a donation at their GoFundMe page, the Nepal Outreach Program, or you can get them on Twitter. Send a donation on Twitter at Kim Marie Ward or at M Susan Robb, ROBB3, on Twitter. So they're good friends with us, and we are very happy to work with them on the show here. Now, we are also very lucky to have 2 brewery sponsors on the show. One of them happens to be Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey. Manskirt is just a really cool spot to go grab a beer. They always have new seasonally inspired ales. It's a cool room, got great murals and good music playing all the time. They're always changing up what they have to offer, and they're just good buddies of ours. So go check out Joe and his Manskirt, Joe Fisher, and go check out Manskirt Brewing. Give them some love on Facebook and Instagram, and of course, give them a visit. They got Burns Night coming up on February 3rd, starting at 5:30. There's a Facebook event, Haggis, Bagpipes, Music, Poetry, Kilts. Kilts are strongly encouraged. So again, that is Manskirt Brewing. Now, Demented Brewing happens to be another brewery that sponsors our show, and we love them. They've been with us for a long time. They're located in Middlesex, New Jersey. They have one of the best tap rooms in the state. They have 16 different things on tap, always rotating, always changing. The thing I love about this brewery is how many different beers they have to offer, how many different styles. It's not just IPAs or stouts. It's everything. They just released Won't Bock Down, their Doppelbock on draft in their tasting room. And this Sunday coming up, they're going to be releasing Red Rum, their all-new cherry-smoked red rye on draft. So that sounds delicious, and that is awesome. So go check out Demented Brewing. Now, Trivia Revolution is a trivia company. I host for them on Wednesday night at Tampa 15, but you can go all over the state of New Jersey and play trivia. You could be in last place and win prizes to craft breweries and beer bars. It's just a fun night out. There's bonus items online that you can look up to get more points. So that's Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, today on the show, we got 2 really cool guests. One of them, ECW and WWF, that shows you how long it is since I watched, WWE legend Al Snow, my favorite wrestler as, when I was in my teens and wrestling was big. Al Snow joined us on the show for a really long, in-depth interview into the wrestling business. And then Ray Hollip, who was Zap from the original American Gladiators, joined us. So a really fun show, guys. With that, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, everybody, this is former WWE superstar Al Snow, and you're listening to, hold it, wait for it, here it comes, Verbal Shenanigans.
This is Ray Hollett, a.k.a. Zap from American Gladiators. You are listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. His shenanigans are cruel and tragic. Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Ooh, baby. It's about that time, Scotty.
Oh, girl.
Gotta get those shenanigans verbally now. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to another another week in this show we call Verbal Shenanigans here. If you are just tuning in, we are about 186 episodes in here. And
we are.
We are a show that interviews interesting people every week, like passionate people, unique stories, athletes, musicians, all that stuff. But go back and check out some of our episodes. And I'm Scott, and this is Mike. And
you know, it's about time you explained to me the show. I've been on here for so long, I've been meaning to ask
you.
Well,
I've always been thinking, like, you know, like, if people are tuning in for the first time, they might want to know a little bit of background, like, what they're tuning into. Like, what
I like to keep it a surprise.
Just, well, I mean, that's
just, like, say nothing and then go into, like, some kind of Nazi propaganda.
Yeah.
That would shock them.
Well, we just lost our listeners for this week. But, yeah, I mean, our show, that kind of is the problem anyway, right? Every week is completely random. So that's what we like. But for someone not familiar with it, they're like, what the hell is this? Like, last week they had Trent Dilfer on. Like, this week they got, you know, some hippo attack survivor or something like that on. But we are coming off a fun episode last week.
Mm-hmm. Kenny Anderson and John Morris, the Olympic curler.
Yes. So February 8th, the Olympics start. Hopefully he's rocking with Canada. I don't know when you tune into curling, but we're going to try to find him.
Well, they're in Korea, so right off the bat, that's not going to be a good time to watch anything live.
No.
I think they're, well, let's see, Australia's like 16 ahead, so I would assume they're 14 ahead.
Well, we haven't quite mastered Australia yet as far as guests. I tried to get a shark attack survivor on, and he was not happy with me that we got the Eastern Standard Time wrong. But in my defense,
America trumps any other Eastern Standard Time.
Our time is the greatest time, the best time. Nobody's time is.
I hope that's how he opens tomorrow.
What the hell? Our time is just the best time. But Berlow, I scored big points on our Me Too pool.
Yeah, man, right off the bat. And I'm the one that told you, and you're like, yes!
Yeah, we did a little Me Too, but we got to post those. I'll make, like, graphic or something. we got to post our results. We did a little Me Too pool, and what that consists of, we each threw 25 names into a list on who we think might be in, you know, get some kind of headline of sexual harassment or something. Again, it does not have to be proven. It just has to be a headline.
Mm-hmm.
And I scored right off the bat with Vince McMahon yesterday.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a new allegation. It could be somebody coming out with a previous allegation.
Yeah, I chose Frank Sinatra. He's dead. Like, I think somebody.
Now, if he pulled that off, you know what? I'll give you 50 points if he gets a new one.
I don't know how we're structuring. I guess we're just going to make them all 1 point each, but 1-0. You came close. You had Seth Rogen. James Franco got caught.
Yeah.
There was somebody else.
Vince and I have Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're.
I'm in the ballpark.
Same church, different pew.
Mm-hmm,
But Vince McMahon doesn't surprise me at all. If I had to rank mine like 25 to 1, he'd be like 1 or 2 on what I think is actually going to happen.
Wouldn't it be great if, like, when he passes away, his family comes out and he's like, you know, he was the most religious man we ever met. I mean, every time he wasn't in wrestling, you know, he was confessing and helping out the church, and he tried to be a priest for a while.
I can't believe the XFL is coming back.
It'll be interesting. I mean, I do see where he saw the wrongs in his past stuff, and all. I mean, he pretty much said, nobody from WWE is going to be involved. This is probably the last time you're going to see me involved. I'll be involved, but I'll be out on the side. You're not going to see me. This is the XFL.
It's going to make our Leo Aragu's hunt hard to.
When we were searching for guests, I sent him the thing. Hey, we're still looking for you if you're available tonight.
Just so you know, that's a punter from the XFL. That
kicker punter. They didn't have money for kickers and punters. They had to do both jobs.
That's one of the guests we were hunting down one day. So we've come a long way since hunting down punters from the XFL. So we've come on.
But now I got to Google this. Kickers of the XFL.
What are your thoughts on this whole Me Too thing and the women's, like, you know, being overly, I know, like, the Grammys were filled with them, and the, what was the award show before that? Not the Tonys. The other one.
Golden Globes.
Golden Globes is filled with it. What are your thoughts on it? Like what?
I agree with the women where they're coming out. You know, they're trying to say, okay, enough is enough. You know, all these powerful guys are turning around, and they basically intentionally use that power to get free sex or kind of, you know, throw out there, hey, it's cool if you say no because I'm a celebrity and you can brag to people and all a celebrity tried to have sex with you or something like that. Right. So, I mean, I obviously get that point. I mean, with any big movement, we got the other side screaming out how many of these are fake or whatever. It's never going to be easy to kind of figure out. I mean, so far of what I've seen, nobody's come out with it and pretty much said, and I want money, so I'm right. not going to discourage anybody in that sense. But I guess the biggest thing, I think we kind of talked about this before, I'm kind of intrigued by who gets the, oh, we hate him because he Me Too'd, and who gets the pass just for various reasons. Because I remember when
if Derek Jeter will get the full pass.
I wouldn't be surprised. He'll just send more Marlins up to the Yankees to win a World Series, and I'll be like, oh, that's cool. Keep touching.
Here's real Muto.
But it was like when we talked about it before, George Sakai. There was a big thing where a guy said, you know, he brought him back. He passed out. Yep. When he woke up, like, he was trying to undo his pants, and he's like, what the hell are you doing?
Right.
And nothing was really said or done after that. I mean, Takai came out and said, no, that I didn't do that. And it was just like, okay. And it just went away. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny how, like, some stick and some, like, people don't care about. Like, you know, like the Mario Batali one, no one really cared about. But then, like, Louis was huge. And then, like, Aziz Ansari seems to be a weird one that people mm-hmm. can't really, you know, figure out. Like, some people are like, oh, it was just a bad date. I mean, I think it's great that I find it funny when, like, men are like, all right, come on, enough with this. Like, we don't need to complain about because it doesn't affect, like, if you have nothing really to worry about in your closet or whatnot, like, to be like, oh, stop with the, you know, enough with this, like, too much, like, there's not much to, you kind of got to take a step back and let this happen. Like, you know, if you're talking about generations of women who's not only them, right, not only the person actually, like, stepping up for awareness, but their mothers and their grandmothers, you know, God knows what happened 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. You know, I think it's a little, like, weird for someone to, like, almost try to silence that. Like, yeah, it's with any movement, there's people like that take advantage of it or exaggerate. But, I mean, there's so many people coming out. And how many of them have you seen, like, for better lack of word, better word, like, overturned or proven fake? I don't think any of them.
I mean, nothing that I've seen so far. I mean, for the most part, like I said, it's just been words and allegations put out there to kind of say this happened, so versus actual, all right, this happened, and by the way, I'm bringing you to court. So I guess how things are going right now, this is all we're going to see until somebody really goes for it. I mean, the only case I could think of was Bill Cosby, and that was thrown out of the courts.
The Bill Cosby thing, that man is a monster, okay? Mm-hmm. Apparently, he's still trying to do stand-up. He's trying to get back. And the clubs that would hire him. I mean, here's a guy that, like, this isn't, like, awkward hitting on someone or making someone uncomfortable. This is legit, like, raping people. Not that there's, I mean, yeah, there is levels. Like, but, like, drugging people, like, putting Mickeys and Spanish Fly in people's drinks and whatnot and getting away with it and having the balls to go up on stage and, like, charge people for tickets to come see you again. Mm. You know, like, I think it's, that man is an absolute monster.
Yeah. I mean, everything I heard, I mean, as much as he's done for black communities, done a lot of work with them, gave a ton of money to charities, I've heard so many stories about people, like, girls who were, like, in their teens guest starring on the Cosby Show with these. And, I mean, through the years, all the different stuff. I remember Diane Parkinson, who was a model for The Price is Right. Mm-hmm. She was on Howard Stern. And Stern was talking about, did you get everything you wanted in your book? She's like, well, no, there was a thing in there about Bill Cosby, and I just want to kind of leave it at that. And he tried to push on it. She's like, no, lawyers are involved. I really can't get into it. So it's not like a one time we heard about this and where you kind of go, they could have faked or whatever, a one-time thing or whatever, versus a full history and different people pretty much say, yeah, he's kind of a rapist.
Yeah, yeah. I see these award shows and like things like that, and I think, like, part of me goes, okay, is this the forum to do it and stuff like that? I guess. But then, like, I look at it, and it's like these award shows are just celebrities giving each other awards. Like, I think the message should be more in them doing things, like opening themselves up to the average person, not just talking to one another in a public forum. I don't know, like in an award forum, you're just talking amongst yourselves. Like, yeah, I get it, people are watching, but it's all the rich in the Hollywood A-list just watching each other make a point. Like, take this to the woman who can't quit her job, who is getting harassed daily and has no option to quit her job because that's her livelihood. Like, I don't know. I think it's more about action instead of just these speeches. But we'll see. I guess time will tell.
I guess the biggest thing to say is it's great you sent out the message. Now, are you going to do something with that message versus just going, yeah, but I said Me Too at the Grammys.
Right. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Like, okay, with the public forums out, the White Lily and everyone getting together. Now, where does this go in the next couple of months? Like, do we go out and help? Because, listen, if you got the money to go support and make public statements and like that, you should be able to also go help the person who has no voice.
Yep.
The person who is the average working female or the average girl trying to get into acting or something like that, or into the office, or trying to get higher up in business. And I don't know, but we'll see. I guess it's time to kind of see what happens in the next few months. Mm-hmm. All right, Berlew, it is.
What is it, Scott?
It's guest time, buddy. I'm excited about this one. So the Royal Rumble happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually like, I watched on Periscope a little bit because I wanted to see if Ronda Rousey showed up.
Mm-hmm. She did at the end.
Yeah, it was really anticlimactic.
Well, they want the big numbers, so it'll save her for WrestleMania.
Right. So I don't really care per se about wrestling anymore, but I do. When I was a kid,
you're like the last comedian who's not like upset. I mean,
it's bizarre.
Like, I won't say I'm upset. I'll keep up with it. Like, I'll probably go home tonight and watch Raw because that's the one thing me and the girl can agree on: wrestling at night to watch.
Oh, she watches it too.
Well, we can get a discussion later. I have a topic kind of bring up later, but she watches it too. And, you know, but we always talk about the old school wrestlers that we enjoyed back in the Attitude Era.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that Attitude Era, that ECW era, that's where I got into wrestling a good chunk, like a lot of people. It was really big back then. Al Snow, he was the one famous for, you know, bringing the head out and kind of being crazy man and having these epic UFC fights. And he became this character of his own. And I really, like, I remember I had an Al Snow autograph I was, like, excited about. And
didn't Head have their own, like, doll or action figure? I could have sworn Head had their
own. They put out an action figure and had to take it off the market because it had a head and people thought it was a severed head or something like that.
Yeah, but I kind of remember that story, but I also kind of remember I thought they had it as like a separate action figure. It's like, oh, Hulk Hogan, oh, Stone Cold, oh, Head.
Maybe. We'll have to ask him.
Yeah.
But Al Snow was a big like, I'm excited because he's another one of my like childhood. Basically, this show is just us kind of living our childhoods through.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But let's get Al Snow on the line. Hey, is this Al Snow?
Speaking.
Al, it's Scott and Mike from the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, Scott?
We are doing great.
Doing well.
We were just talking how you were one of the guys who got me into, like, you know, I watched wrestling when I was a little kid, like on Saturday mornings and Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior days. But then like high school came and all that. But then like this little ECW promotion came, and I remember seeing the lights go out and all these crazy heads being thrown into the ring. And you were like the first guy that kind of brought me back into wrestling for a little while. So thanks for giving us a few minutes here, Al.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Anytime. Now, Al, let's talk. So where are you living now, and how much are you still involved in the world of wrestling?
I am living in Louisville, Kentucky, and still very much involved. I still am wrestling pretty regularly, simply because I enjoy what I do. Still love it. Still wrestle all over the world. Just was in Philadelphia at an event, the Wrestling Icons of Wrestling, and just a convention. But the week before, I was in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and also Medicine Hat, Alberta, Canada, and I'm going to be going to Scotland this year, and Malaysia, and Australia, and back to England, and quite a few other places, and I go around the United States as well. So,
you've been in the business for a while. Let's go to the early beginnings in the 80s. Well, what got you into wrestling specifically, and when you go for a tryout with Ole and Gene Anderson, I mean, what is that like when you're looking at some of the two of the biggest names in wrestling, just the men you try to step into a ring?
It's very intimidating, you know, but if you want something so bad that you just can't see any other way but to, you know, to do it, you suck it up and you just keep moving forward. And you don't stop. I mean, you don't let anything keep you from getting to get to the goal that you want to get to. It ain't easy. It sucks. You know, they beat the crap out of me and tried to break me, and send me home. But they did send me home. You know, I still turned right around and found somebody to train me and got right back in. Never stopped. Just kept at it.
No, let's talk about when you finally do get a break or whatever you want to say, get into an organization and you go through gimmick after gimmick after gimmick and trying different things. How much control like is on you coming up with this, and how much is like a suggestion from someone in the organization like, hey, maybe you should try this? And how long do you give it till you give up and try something new? Because you reinvented yourself several times until Al Snow took off.
I reinvented myself numerous times, throughout the years. That's quite honestly, it's the hardest part of, and the key to your success is what I call learning your voice, you know, finding out who and what you are and how to communicate it to an audience to where they can connect with it. That is ultimately the key. I mean, it's absolute. And it takes sometimes, you get lucky and you find the right thing at the right time, right out of the gate. And sometimes it takes, like myself, it took a long time. It took a lot of years and a lot of mistakes. And even after I'd found it, I was still making mistakes and didn't in some ways know what it was I really had and how to utilize it to its best extent.
So. Now, when you're in the middle of a gimmick that isn't working, like whatever that means to you, like whatever one that comes to your mind. When you're in the middle of something that you know isn't working, are you just praying for someone to say, okay, that's the end of this for now? Or do, no. do you have control of that? Or are you just trying to find a way to make this work?
You just, you know, you try to find a way to adjust and adapt and to make it work and, mm-hmm. and you know, and evolve it to where it becomes who you really are and then, you know, how it comes, then it comes across the way that it should. That's all on you. You know, they'll sometimes point you in the right direction and then, you know, you as the performer, the wrestler, you have to now do the best. You know, I tell guys, you know, I had a conversation earlier today with a very prominent wrestling website in England in interview, and they were we were talking about this very topic. And, you know, the big myth these days is that, you know, oh, well, I'll just get to WWE and WWE will make me a star and, you know, it'll all be good. And you know what I mean? And I'm like, you know, when I was in running the developmental program for WWE in OVW, we had a building that seated 400 people on a Wednesday night, and it cost nothing to get in, you know, no money, just time and effort to get there. And a lot of the Wednesday nights were, you know, a third full. You know, they weren't packed. The whole place wasn't sold out. So, you know, several people, several of the wrestlers were like, you know, disappointed or frustrated because they felt like they should be in the main roster, should be in WWE, you know, at that very moment. And I said, okay, well, you know, I'd say, well, you're not ready. And they'd get upset and get angry at me. And I just sat them all down. And I said, let me ask something. I said, how many of you deserve to be in WWE? And they all put their hands up.
Right.
Because they all had the belief that all they had to do was go to WWE, the main roster. You know, they were under developmental. And all they had to do was go there and, you know, the rest would take care of itself. They'd be stars. And I said, I don't think any of you deserve to go. And, oh, well, what do you mean? You know, they got very upset. I asked them the question, and I asked lots of people this question. And that is, if you went to WWE tomorrow, tell me what you would do there differently that you're not doing here. Because you can't fill a 400-seat building for nothing. But now you're going to go to WWE and suddenly you're going to do something different or something that you're not doing here, but you're going to be able to sell out a 10 or 15,000-seat arena. And you're going to motivate those same people that wouldn't come here to see you for free. You're going to motivate them to now, you know, spend money to park and spend, instead of it being for free to see you, they're now going to be required to spend $35 a ticket. If you can tell me what you're going to do or not do, you know, that you're going to do there that you ain't doing here, I'm all for it. And you can go tomorrow. If you can't, you might want to stay here and prepare yourself and learn what you need to learn.
Right.
And, you know, because ultimately the only thing that's different between WWE and the smaller organization that you're working for right now is that it's just WWE is a much larger, much better produced platform. But if you are still going to be the same performer that you were in the smaller platform with less of a budget, and of course, because there's less of a budget, there's less expectations on you. What are you going to do when the platform that you're on right now, you know, the guy's got, the promoter's got television, he's got an hour of television, and for a commercial on his television, it costs, let's say it costs $500, which is, you know, for a local commercial for 30 seconds, you know? So, you know, you're going to get 6 minutes of for a television match on his local, you know, television program. That's $3,000. That's it. You know, yeah. So the expectations right. are you just have to sell $3,000 worth of tickets. Now you go to WWE, and I can tell you for a fact, because Kevin Dunn, the president of television production, at the time that I was there, told me that it was $50,000 for a 30-second commercial. I'm sure it's a lot more now. And I know that in TNA, it was still 50 grand
Jeez.
For a 30-second commercial. So you get a six minutes of airtime on TV, that's an investment of $300,000. That means they're expecting you to do more than $300,000 worth of business off of that 6 minutes of television time.
It's an awesome way to look at it, because I would never, you know, the well, onlooker
it's
never
not,
thinks
it's not
of
a way to, and it's not a way to look at it. That is the way it
the
is.
The truth, yeah.
It is the truth. So what are you going to do there that you're not doing here? What are you going to change that you're, and why are you not doing it here? What are you waiting for up there? Because they're not going to do it for you. They'll give you the television time on a bigger platform, but they're going to have a much deeper investment and a much greater expectation of that investment. But if you can't deliver here on this investment of $3,000 for 6 minutes, what are you going to do of $300,000 for 6 minutes?
No.
You know, the promotions don't make you a star. You make yourself a star, and the promotions capitalize and will promote and advertise and market you, but they have to have something that you've created to do that. And that's up to you.
Now, when you first started with the WWE, you had a couple gimmicks, being under a mask as Avatar Shinobi, and then they bumped you up to Leaf Cassidy, but then a couple years later, they kind of, I don't know how to call it, push you down to ECW or sent you down to ECW.
I tried to quit. I was under a contract, a 2-year contract, and I asked for my release. They wouldn't allow me to leave. They had another year option, and they rolled it over on me. and then I was put on loan to ECW, because unbeknownst to all of us, they had a working relationship that we all suspected but didn't know for sure. And, you know, I was still under contract with WWE, but I was put on a kind of a loan there to, you know, and I went there specifically, you know, on my own to get myself, you know, create myself and to make myself into something that I could come back with and that they could then in capitalize on and exploit and promote, which, you know, thank God it worked out. You know, but, and I was trying to create that prior to when I left, you know, but, and finally it took me going to, you know, to ECW to be able to put it all together.
Now, speaking of putting it all together, this is where I discovered you. Now, I'm not much of a wrestling fan these days, but it was this era that I really got into it. And it was like I said, I told you before, it was this head thing and this the Prodigy music and the hardcoreness and the rawness of it. How did you come up with this whole personality and persona? And when did the head thing actually take off? And how did you go from, hey, I'm carrying a head around, to the whole crowd having heads?
Well, it was a work in progress, you know, even before I left WWE or WWF at the time. I was already trying to show that I was going kind of crazy from the frustration that I for real was feeling, and you know, and I was pointing the finger at everyone else when really I should have pointed the finger at myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just a fact. But because I was pointing the finger at everyone else, I was getting even more frustrated and you know, getting a bigger chip on my shoulder and focusing on the wrong things. And,
you know, when I went to ECW, you know, Paul didn't have any real plans for me, but I was so driven and knew that I had to get myself over. I just kept trying things and, you know, trying to show that I'd suffered a nervous breakdown and was reading, you know, abnormal psychology books, found a case study of a woman who was suffering from paranoid schizophrenia with transference disorder. I mean, she, you know, she was ill and heard voices and believed that inanimate objects were real, but she thought they were the ones that were sick, not her. She transferred her illness onto something else. And, you know, I thought, well, you know, I found a styrofoam head and started taking it to the ring and talking to a tree as if it was real. And it worked because it gave voice to all the frustration I had. What really made me connect with the audience were the vignettes, were, yep, you know, backstage, more than anything else, because it allowed people to see me communicating, you know, with the head, and it being a normal situation. The only thing that was abnormal about the situation was, you know, was me talking to a head. So the more I did that, the more it, you know, started connecting with the audience. And, you know, I, in turn, you know, demonstrated that, trying to demonstrate it during matches, that, you know, I could wrestle. It wasn't that I couldn't wrestle. It was just that I was a lunatic who thought he spoke to a head that wasn't real, you know, wasn't live. And it worked. And the reason the only reason it worked was because it was my voice. It was who I was at the time. I was a very, you know, frustrated, you know, little, you know, just bitter, pointing the finger at everybody and blaming the head. I would blame the head when really I was blaming, you know, the wrestling business, the fans, everyone else. But I was, you know, claiming it was the head when it was really, I felt like it was everybody else, when really it was just me.
Watching ECW in those days, I got, when you're over, is there ever a better crowd to be around than an ECW crowd? Because it just seemed like it was the most amazing scene ever, and looking back at all the old matches.
Well, I mean, any crowd, any wrestling, you know, group of fans, it's just, I got to tell you, it's the most, amazing thing in the world. I mean, it's better than anything you can imagine. I mean, I tell people all the time, it's better than sex. I mean, it is, quite honestly, it's the greatest high. It will make you feel more alive than anything else you could possibly imagine that you could do. And especially when it's going good, when you are getting over like that at that time. But, you know, that crowd was really, they were a tough crowd. I mean, they were unmerciful. I mean, you made even the slightest mistake and they smelt blood. Oh my God. they would eat you alive. You know, you were going out there basically, you know, and, you know, like people on their vacation swim with dolphins. Well, you were going out there to swim with sharks, and they knew it, you know, the audience knew it. You know, they were as much a part of the show as the show was. I mean, as crazy as it sounds.
Yes, for sure. Now, when that goes through, you're wrestling for ECW, you're making a name for yourself again, you're becoming a main eventer and whatnot. When you go back to WWF or WWE, was it the same feeling? Were you excited to be back? Was it, or did you feel like you were like, okay, I got to start again now at the bottom with this gimmick I've developed? Were you like, was it pure excitement, or is there a little nervousness too?
Well, there was nervousness because, you know, what worked one place doesn't guarantee you work another, and what one a booker, I guess, or, you know, that we use as a term, but one promoter, you know, what Paul Heyman is going to have a different vision than Vince McMahon.
Right.
You know, so now you've got to go in and kind of re-educate not only the audience, but Vince. And, you know, I had a direct relationship with Paul that I didn't have with Vince, and I should have. That was a big mistake on my part, was not establishing a direct or personal relationship with him. That would have been key to, you know, helping me, you know, in my career and in my, you know, in that stay at WWE. I mean, that would have made a big, big difference, because I would just do things. And part of that reason was, is that, you know, I came from an, you know, 14, 15, 16 years where that was what I did. I just was out there on my own, and I just did what it took to keep, make myself either the thing or one of the things that helped sell tickets. And, you know, like, you know, for, you know, the, what does everybody want? What does everybody need? Like, everybody thought that was, it was a double entendre, but it was not in reference to, in any way, shape or form, to the, you know, oral sex. It wasn't.
Right.
It was the fact that here was a guy, me, who had been trying for, you know, over a decade. Think about that. If it were real, over a decade of trying to have a success. Now I have it, but I don't, because what does everybody want? Not me. They want the head. What does everybody need? Not me. The head. And ultimately, what does everybody love? They love that plastic head. And the, what I was doing, if you listen and pay actually attention, you know, was I would be getting angrier as I said it. And it was because I was setting it up for the audience that eventually I was going to get jealous of the head. And I would basically turn on it. And then, like, you'd watch other wrestlers have storylines with other wrestlers. I'd have a storyline with the head.
And it's true. Yep.
Have matches, and then eventually I'd make up with them and, you know, go on about my business. You know, it would have been great. So
Tell us a little bit about the hardcore wrestling in WWF. Did it give you more freedom to do stuff? Was it more of a pain in the butt? And can you give us a little bit of who decided with you and Hardcore Holly to go into the Mississippi River?
As far as, you know, freedom, you're always free. Once you step through the curtain, and a lot of guys will try to tell you they're not, and they'll make excuses, but, you know, it's up to you. Mm-hmm. Once you step through that curtain and down and onto that ramp, there is nothing, and I promise you, there is nothing that any singular any person can do to help you. Nothing they can do to help you, and nothing they can do to hinder you. Nothing. Not even your opponent. You know, your opponent can, you know, when working with you, can make you look better, and he can attempt to make you look bad, but even though that, you have your own control, because if the guy won't, you know, let's per se, if you pick him up for a body slam and he, what we call, you know, dead asses you, and you go to pick him up and he just, it makes you look sloppy and like you're weak and can't pick him up. Guess what? I ain't picking you up no more. Now I'm going to make you run, and I'm going to do other things to figure out a way to do what I need to do without your help, you know, and I'll figure it out. You know, I don't have to stick with what we talked about. I'll just do whatever it takes, because that's what it comes down to, is you have to do whatever it takes. And, because the number one rule in wrestling is to take shit and make shinola, you know,
yeah.
Make any excuse you want, but that's ultimately it. Ring doesn't show up. Well, you're going to wrestle on some mats on the floor. Well, there aren't no mats. Well, you're going to put a piece of canvas down and you're going to figure, you know, and now you just won't throw yourself all over the place because it's on the floor. But you're still going to put on a wrestling show somehow, some way. You know, it's the way it goes.
Now, give us a little insight to what you just said. Like if there's a guy that's not cooperating or whatnot, or how do you deal with that? Like, how much as a person who we see the match going on, but like what's going on in the ring when like there is someone who's maybe stubborn or not working with you? How does that work? Like, do you try to almost negotiate it in the ring, or does someone take the lead?
You're going to have to just take the lead for yourself and then, you know, and then protect yourself. And you know, like I said, there are a million ways to do it. And you're free to do them any way you want. As long as you do them, you know, this is another big myth is that, you know, if like I'll teach and I'll train and I'll do seminars and they'll always like, he's, you know, he's like that old bitter guy, and he doesn't like, you know, the style of wrestling today. And I'm like, I don't care what style you do. You know, if you get in the ring, you can throw a bag of cats on each other. I really honestly don't care what you do. All I care is that you did it within the context of trying to win and trying not to lose. I say this all the time, and I can't emphasize it enough. It is the only thing that has been and still is fake about professional wrestling. Everything that's physically done in that ring, contrary to what you or anyone else will ever think or believe, everything is quite real. It's simply the intent behind it and the way it's done that's fake, if you want to use that word.
Right.
I'll slam you, and trust me, I'll slam you and you'll probably shit your pants. But you'll know it's real. Not because I slammed you any differently or any harder than I did the guy that I wrestled last night. I won't do that. But you'll know it's real. And it will actually physically hurt. But I won't slam you with the intent of trying to utilize that to beat you. Because I know that whatever we're doing to a certain end. You know, whether that's you win tonight or I win or we get disqualified or we go to a draw or whatever. So the intent behind the move that I do, I grab you in a headlock. Let's face it, guys. You guys have had a headlock put on you if you have brothers or sisters and you've put a headlock on somebody else.
Right.
Or if you've been bullied in school, you've had a headlock been put on you.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts. Correct?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Well, believe me, if I actually, and I know how to do it, put a headlock on somebody, I can make that person hurt to the point of probably a good, strong chance of making him submit. But when I put a headlock on a guy in a wrestling ring, the only thing that is quote-unquote fake is my intent. So therefore, I'm going to put it on him, but I'm just not going to put it on him so hard or even hard enough for him to feel, because you in the audience can't tell, and I'm going to make it look like I am.
Right.
Using it to try to get him to give up. Hence the fact that that's the only thing that's fake. So, you know, so it's so important that everything that you do within that wrestling ring, I don't care how you do it. I don't care how much you do. I don't care when you do it. I don't care, you know, if you do nothing. All I care is that you do it so that I, as just a general audience member, can go, he's trying to beat that guy. And that guy is trying not to get beaten. Because if you were watching a boxing fight, you'd only care if somebody won or lost. And if you were watching an MMA fight, you'd only care if somebody won or lost. And guess what's the one thing that's fake about both of those things a lot of times? Just the outcome. Hmm. So it's the intent behind what is done. Not what physically is being taken place. So, you know, a lot of the younger wrestlers will try to use that as an excuse or justification, and they'll claim that, oh, no, you know, wrestling's changed. And I'm sure you two probably have even used that term yourselves, of saying wrestling's changed, it's different now. And I promise you guys that if it has actually changed, then that means that something new is fake.
Right.
And there isn't. Huh. It's still, in 1901, guess what was the one thing that the audience wanted to believe in and the one thing the performers tried to convince them of? That the outcome was not predetermined. Hmm. In 1936, same thing. In 1975, in 1989, in 2002, and in 2018, the outcome is the one thing that you're trying to convince the audience of and the one thing that the audience wants to believe in. So feel free to do whatever you want.
Right.
Just don't ever have me question why you're doing it. You want to dive out of the ring? Brother, do it. Fly. I am impressed with your athletic ability. But if it were a real competitive situation, there are only two reasons you'd ever dive out of the ring. And that's either because you were desperate enough to do it, or you were angry enough to do it. Otherwise, you'd never take the physical risk doing it. And if I'm sitting there watching and you just indiscriminately knock the guy out onto the floor and then run to the ropes with your happy ass and dive out of the ring, I'm going to go, why did you just do that?
if within 30 seconds of the match starting, and unless you've gotten a story that I know that you're so angry at this guy to do it, 30 seconds, you've knocked him to the floor and you just threw your body helter-skelter out of the ring on him and then immediately threw him back in the ring. And 3 seconds after you threw him back in the ring, he beat you up. And what was the point of diving out of the ring?
Right.
That makes no sense. I don't care how athletic it is. I don't care how incredible it is or awe-inspiring it is. It just doesn't, within the context of the story of the match, it doesn't make any sense. I don't care how you justify it. If you're really out there trying to wrestle and try to beat your opponent, why don't you just knock him down to the very place you could beat him and then bend over and pick him back up? You just told me that there's no consequence to anything you do. So what you do doesn't mean anything. And if it doesn't mean anything, why do I care? And if you guys and anyone else in the sound of my voice would care to, you know, believe that I'm completely wrong, let me ask something. If it has changed, as like so many of you believe, and that you now think that an audience only cares about and only pays to see the athleticism and the physical movements of the wrestlers, why would a promoter, why would Vince McMahon, a businessman, mind you, bother wasting the money and the time and expense of hiring a referee to put him in the ring? If it's just about the physical performance, why do we? Why? If you can answer me, if you guys can give me an answer, and I'm a reasonable man. If you can give me an answer, I'll listen. Why do we still have referees? Better yet, if winning and losing doesn't matter, that's not what audiences care about. They only care about the physical performance. Then why do we still have championship titles? Why do we have wrestlers aspiring to be the best, to be a heavyweight champion? Who cares? I mean, the title doesn't mean anything. What? Better yet, here's the final question. If that really is true, and the wrestlers themselves believe it, like they've convinced themselves they do, why do they get upset and get butthurt and get the boo-boo face when they're asked to lose? It doesn't matter. Nobody cares. They didn't come to watch you win or lose. They came to watch you come out and perform and show what you could do physically. So as long as you impress an audience with that, what do you care if you win or lose? It doesn't matter.
Wow. That's pretty deep, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. It's cool to hear, like, a man. Basically, you're a guy who has enough time in this to do a thesis on it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like hearing from a professor, you know. But I'm
all for whatever you guys can tell me. Okay, anyone, I don't care who it is. If you guys can answer those questions for me and tell me how that's. Then I'll agree. Oh, you're absolutely right. Wrestling has changed 100%. It's no longer what it was. It's now 100% about just the physical performance. And you know what? Vince McMahon is an idiot because he's paying for referees for no reason. And he's paying thousands upon thousands of dollars for titles to be made.
Yep.
Nobody cares about because they know it's, you know, not about that. Well, not about title, because you have to win, or you have to care about whether or not guys win or lose, and we don't. We don't care about them winning or losing. And wrestlers, they're not really upset about losing. They just put that on because it's fun to be entertaining backstage. Make it seem like they're upset.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you had the program with Mick Foley and The Rock, when they are on the top tier of the WWF, do you change anything and how you come to the ring or what's going on with the storyline? Do you change anything about you going into this, or is it just got the opportunity, I know what to do here?
The opportunity, and then, you know, you try to, use whatever you can in that opportunity to be a star, to be, you know, that's what it comes down to, is taking any opportunity they give you, any time you have out there on that TV to make yourself a star.
Right.
You know, and make yourself an attraction. You don't want to just be a great wrestler. And there is nothing wrong with being
a great wrestler, but you need to be a great wrestler for a purpose, to an end. And to in that end, that purpose, there's only one sole reason, and that is to be, you know, to be the thing that sells tickets. You know, it's good to be the thing that helps sell tickets, but you really want to be the, you want to be the man. You want to be, you know, you want to be Steve Austin. You know, you want to be The Rock. And those guys are the ones who, you know, became the things, the people that sold tickets. You know, Hulk Hogan. You want to be Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
You don't want to be just another name or face in the crowd. You want to be Hulk Hogan. And that's really your goal, you know.
Now, I look at your years in wrestling. So, I mean, on your Wikipedia, it says like 82. It might have even been before that. So you're coming up on close to four decades in the business. And I could tell just by talking to you and hearing your experience, you have this outlook on it where you understand the business much more than probably the young guy who walks the door. What are you doing, like, as far as now? I know you've been in so many different roles and federations and this and that. What do you do now? Like, are you involved in training, like, the young kids who come up? And what do you tell them as far as trying to get into this? Do you try to start slow, or do you try to give them, like, all the confidence in the world immediately?
Well, I do give them the confidence, and I tell them, and I do believe this in all my heart. And I tell whether you want to get into this or anything, I truly believe, and people will say it all the time, you know, that a lot of people pay the lip service to it, but, you know, I've been there. I've done it. And that, quite honestly, is that you can, if you want to be a wrestler, you want to be anything, you can do it. Mm-hmm. You can be anything you want to be, but you've got to be willing to accept some truths and some inalienable truths. They're not subjective. These are unquestionable. Number one is you have to be willing to invest time, money, and effort in yourself, because ultimately you're asking a promoter to invest his time and money and effort into you to promote you and to give you a platform. Again, it costs, you know, $300,000 for 6 minutes of television time. What are you doing that's going to make a person willing to give that $300,000 worth of television time to you when right. they could just sell it to Ford Motor Company?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's on you. That's a choice. That's a decision. The other thing is that if you want to live the life that others don't live, you have to be willing to do the things that others don't do. You cannot expect, there are a lot of people out there that, you know, I think like 1% of the population or 2% of the population make $400,000 a year. But you are bitching and complaining about the fact that you don't make $400,000 a year, but you want to live a life like a person who makes $60,000 a year, and you don't want to live the life that it takes a guy who makes $400,000, because he's doing things you ain't doing. That's why he's making $400,000 a year. And if you want to make it, you can. Because that's the wonderful thing about America. You can do it. That's God's honest truth. You can. You just got to be willing to do what it takes to do that. If you're not, be honest. Say, I like living, you know, and we all grow up with and are educated to that life. And that is, you go to work, you come home, you sleep in your same bed every night, you work Monday through Friday, you're looking forward to the weekends unless you have some overtime that you have to do or you want to do, and then you have 2 weeks of vacation a year. Right, guys?
Mm-hmm.
That's life.
That's life, man.
Well, guess what? You want to be a professional wrestler? You want to work for WWE? You're going to be on the road, and you're going to be on the road a lot. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be living 24 hours a day, 7 days a week in the wrestling business. And whether you're wrestling and or you're traveling or you're at home, you're constantly thinking, evaluating, trying to make sure, what can I do? What do I need to do? Who do I need to talk to? Who do I not need to say anything to in the future? Because every single guy in that locker room is competing with you.
Right.
And they're going to do everything they can. If you have 30 seconds of television time, they want that 30 seconds. And they're going to do whatever it takes to get that 30 seconds next week from you. And you need to do whatever it takes to keep that 30 seconds of television time so you don't lose it. So while you're home for those 2 days or 3 days that you're home and you now have to get on the phone and do interviews and promote yourself and promote the events, you're also thinking and evaluating and making phone calls to keep that 30 seconds of television time so you don't lose it. Because if you ain't doing it, somebody else is, and they're going to take it from them.
Right.
No.
Now, if you're not willing to live your life like that, there's nothing wrong with that. Mm. Then go do something else,
Yeah.
You're not willing to go, even when you're sick, you're hurt, you're not feeling good, you're not willing to go to the gym and literally train like an athlete to kill yourself so you can just simply look like you're an athlete and not just, hey, you don't get to wear a uniform. You get to go out there without your shirt on. And you get to go out in front of 20,000 people in that building and on TV days and pay-per-view days, millions of people worldwide.
Right.
And you've got to look like at 100% 365 days a year. You don't get an off day. You don't get to do like a bodybuilder or other athletes do where they work up to and they peak on a certain day and then they can kind of, still look good, but put on size or mass or, go off their diet. No, you got to look that way and look like a marketable and a product that you can sell 365 days a year.
Hmm.
Want to live your life like that? Don't. Then accept it. Understand it and say it's not for me. I have guys and have had so for 36 years. I've had guys come up and say all the time, I'll do anything. I'll do anything to be a wrestler. I'll do anything to live my dreams. And I always tell them, well, we'll see. We'll see if you will.
Yep.
Because I can't tell you the number of people that say it, talk the talk, and cannot walk the walk.
Hmm.
And if there's any guy that is there in WWE, no matter even if he's at the bottom of the card, let me tell you something. That guy has got balls the size of bowling balls, and he has the constitution and the will that's gotten him to a place that you never will be. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, in a disparaging way. I want you to understand it's like much like we have this thing in the United States where we go, oh, that band, they're a one-hit wonder.
I know, right? Yep.
I mean, think about it, guys. How many musicians are there? How many bands are there? And how few even get a song on the charts, let alone a song on the charts and it becomes a hit?
Well, it's funny. Like, I work as a – I mean, I try to do comedy as much as possible. And these people, they see these specials on Netflix, and these comics, they're like, it wasn't that good, It was kind of – I'm like, do you realize
what it took
to get there, how much – grinding through the clubs and exposing yourself and working that material forever and a little bit of luck and a little bit of, but a lot of work to just even get Netflix to even look at you. Yet you're a comic doing the shows with me with 25 people in the audience and doing 10-minute sets and having a hard time, So.
Yeah. It's, and that applies not just to wrestling, but like you said, to comedy and all that.
Life in general. We're always jealous of the guy who made it.
But we don't give
him credit for how he got there.
Exactly.
That's like getting pregnant, Everybody's congratulating you for when you get pregnant, but nobody sees how many times you got screwed to do it.
What are your thoughts on, did you like wrestling with stiff workers, and is there a limit to stiffness? Like, one coming to mind was in Tough Enough with Pewter doing a key lock on Angle.
Well, that wouldn't work.
Mm.
I mean, that was a mistaken situation because I had preached against that being a shoot. Because it quite honestly, it shouldn't have been. You can't control those things. And that was a good example of that. You never can predict. You don't know. You know, Stiff is really, it's a, how can I say this? Being stiff is one thing, and we used to call it working tight. And the reason it was tight was because working tight was you hit hard in safe places, okay, and in safe ways. There are ways that you can hit another person and it not be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Meat against meat bruises. Meat against bone,
lacerates.
No, it doesn't lacerate. Bone against bone breaks. Bone against meat tears. You know, between the collarbone and the nipple, I don't care how hard you hit me. You want to hit me on the back, as long as it's up in the thick, meaty part, not down in the lower part of my spine or in my neck, lay it in. You know, you want to punch me in the face? Well, now we're going to have a problem. Now, I don't mind.
Right.
Listen, I don't care who you are, and I don't care how tough you are, and you're never going to convince me. I don't care. Nobody likes to get punched in the face. All right? Nobody. All right? Nobody goes out, you know, wakes up in the morning and goes, you know what I need to do today? I need to get punched in the face. All right? Here's a big surprise for you. I've been punched in the face a lot. Now, if you can't tell it just by looking at me and my wonderful male model looks, then, you know, you need to turn the lights on. Okay? So it's going to be a challenge for you to think of a new way to ball up your fist and punch me in the face. If that's what you want to do and that's how you want to wrestle, that's fine. You're not going to ever hear me complain. But guess what I'm going to do?
Give it back.
I'm going to punch you back.
No.
Now, if you don't complain, you think that's okay, great. That's how we work, and I'll know that going in. Now, we're not going to look as good doing it. I'm not going to be able to sell as well or put you over as strongly as because I'm going to be busier trying to protect myself. But I'll do it. And again, that's not because I'm some tough badass or anything like that. It's just that's the way we work. Well, then that's the way we work. If you go back and you bitch and complain, now we've got a problem. Okay? But here's the biggest issue. Okay? And this has become popular in wrestling. And the only reason it's become popular in wrestling is because now and I got to be quite honest, these morons, these marks, these stupid, stupid marks for themselves have got the freedom to only work once a month or a couple of times a month. Mm. Or even if they work every week, they only work once a week. So as a result, you punch them in the face, they've got all week long to heal up until next week.
Right.
And they also get to kind of forget how much it hurt. Now, back in the day when I first started, there were a lot. The business was full of tough, grizzled, hard. And I mean hard would take a thumb and jab your eye out and not even blink. Okay? because listen, guys, everybody owns a gun. Not everybody has the stomach to pull the trigger.
Right.
Mm. Okay? These men would be willing, would not have a question or a doubt to pull the trigger. All right? They hated to be touched. You did not go in that ring and lay into each other. You know why? Because they had to work tonight. And then tomorrow night, they had to work again.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next night, and the next night, and the next night. They worked 7 nights a week. Now, listen. We'll go back to your situation with you. You punch me in the face. Great. Well, okay, that's what we're going to do. We're going to punch each other in the face. But we're going to punch each other in the face tomorrow night, too. And we're going to do it Wednesday night, and Thursday night, and Friday night, and Saturday night, and Sunday night. When do you think you're going to get tired of me punching you in the face?
Yeah.
But guess what? I'm going to keep punching you in the face as long as you punch me in the face. Here's the other problem. You know the guy that's at the top of the show? That main event wrestler that you want to wrestle and you want to work with because you'll make more money, he's watching you punch me in the face. Do you think he wants now you to get in the ring with him so you can punch him in the face? No, he doesn't. Now let's go a step further, guys, so that I can really explain this, because there are going to be a lot of people that are butthurt out there and don't really accept or understand what it is I'm trying to tell them. Let's just go from a business aspect again, because ultimately that's what it's called. It's called the wrestling business, not the wrestling I'll just have a charity. you and I, we, for some reason, become hot. And we're the thing that's selling tickets. Everybody's paying to see us. The problem is that we have taught the audience to expect, and they pay to see you and I punch each other in the face. Now we can't stop punching each other in the face because that's what we sold.
Mm.
Okay? But here's the big thing. You punch me in the face one night, you just catch me at the right way at the right time, and you break my jaw. Ah, man, that sucks for me. Well, it sucks for you too, doorknob. You know why? Because that money that we were both making together, now you don't get to make it anymore because I'm going to set it home for 6 weeks. And now you ain't got somebody to wrestle. Oh, you can go wrestle somebody else. Yeah, but for whatever reason, you and that other guy, you're not hot. You're not clicking. So you're not the thing that's selling tickets.
Jeez.
So now the houses drop. And now not only do you not make as much money, I'm making no money, but everyone else on the card that you were trying to impress by punching me in the face, they don't make as much money because we're not drawing as big a house.
Jeez.
Well, congratulations. You are a super tough guy in a fake business. And you, and which is the most oxymoronic thing that you can do. You know?
Wow.
But if you want, you want to be tough, I would suggest, and you enjoy being hit, and you enjoy hitting others, brother, there's another business called MMA.
MMA.
Why are you here? You're going to make even more money there, and you're going to have a much better time because there's a line of people standing outside that locker room that can't wait to punch you in the face.
Al, I guess you've never thought about that before. That was like the most deep answer to like a.
But it's well thought out.
That like a chart.
Guys, I'm telling you, it's not the, like I put a lot of thought to this. It's just common sense,
right? But and you lived
that
it.
Common sense is just went out the door.
Yeah, yeah.
Because these guys don't, and again, this isn't a knock, but they don't do it for an income. They don't do it for a living. And then when you start to do things, this is what I've done for 36 years. This is how I've fed my family. This is how I've kept a roof over my head. This mm-hmm. is, you know, and it's going to come to an end, you know. So guess what, guys? You better get those punches to my face in as quick as you can because I'm not going to be around anymore. And hey, here, you know, for those of you that are upset about this conversation and sitting there like, well, next time you see me walk around, I'm just going to walk up and punch you in the face. Go ahead. Not because I want you to or because I'm some super tough guy, but if you honestly think in your mind that has not been done before or that you suddenly, I'm gonna beat his ass, guess what? He's been there, done that.
Okay? See, I have the opposite thought interviewing you. I'm actually like scared through the headphones right now that like
I'm at a point in my life, there ain't nothing you can do to me that ain't been done other than set me on fire or shoot me with a gun. That's it.
So now this is like a horror movie where I want to keep fire by me.
But you'd be amazed at how many of the quote unquote wrestlers get butthurt when you say something like that.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, he just, you know, he's a pussy. You just done what you hit in the face. You're right. I don't. You know what? I know some professional boxers who are probably some of the toughest men I've ever met. They don't want to get punched in the face either.
No.
Not unless they get paid to do it.
Their job is to avoid getting punched in the face.
That is the real science of boxing. Yep. They can't be able to hit somebody without getting hit in the face.
That's why that's why Floyd Mayweather is so great because he doesn't get punched in the face.
Exactly. That was why Muhammad Ali was so great. Was because he did everything he could to not get punched in the face.
Al, like it's amazing talk. I feel like I could talk to you for hours, but I don't want to take up all your time. I have two questions for you before we go. One, what are you doing nowadays? Like, if people want to know what's going on with you, and you know, go check you out. And two, do you still have the original head?
Well, to answer your second question first, of course I do. Come on now.
Well, I don't know if you ever lost it or someone took it or who knows.
It's not like you can just find good head anywhere, okay? and once you do, you want to keep them as much as possible. And divorce court is a expensive court. So basically,
I know.
Oh, I do too. So And Head knows where all the bodies are buried, like literally. So, you know, we're going to stay together for a very long time. Even if I have to just keep them tied up in the suitcase so they can't get out. The good thing for me is, though, they have no arms and legs, so it's not like they can run away.
Right.
The second question is, one, I do magic for the blind now. It's a way for me to give back to the community. It's awesome. I go to charity events all the time and, you know, do things. They love card tricks. You just have to say ta-da after a trick or they don't know anything happens. You know, I'll be like, is this your card? And they'll be like, I don't know. And you're like, it is. Ta-da. And they're like, oh, my God, how do you do it? So, I've got a couple big projects going on. I started Collar and Elbow, trying to create a wrestling brand of clothing for wrestling fans because ultimately, guys, this is the truth. I mean, I can't sincerely I love it. I mean, I have, and I've been blessed to be able to do what I love so much for 36 years because I'm just genuinely a fan of it. And I tried to create a wrestling brand that represented how much we feel for it as fans. And I wanted to make designs that if you're a wrestling fan, you get it. And if you wear it out, though, around other people, around your friends, because let's face it, I mean, we know, you know, we're wrestling fans, so we always get those people go, well, you like that, it's me. Well, wow, thanks, Sherlock. I wasn't able to put the clues together to figure that one out. But I'm glad that you, thanks, Karen. I wouldn't be able to figure that one out without you. You know, appreciate you telling me that at the dinner party, that, you know, what are you doing? Why are you wearing that shirt? You're a wrestling fan. Well, I'm going to wear a shirt that, you know, says Collar and Elbow on it because that's, you know, every wrestler locks up and does the collar and elbow lockup.
Yep.
And I'm going to come up with, I try to create designs that Karen ain't going to be able to bust my balls about. But if you guys come to the party and you see me wearing the shirt and you see collar and elbow in the design, you go, I get it. Oh, that's cool, man. That's awesome. And now you and I can go over in the corner and we can have a talk about wrestling and we can leave Karen sitting there just drinking her wine and getting drunk. And then she can go abuse her husband later after we all leave. So, you know.
Karen inspires every good business. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's always a Karen.
Karen's got the haircut that says, can I see your manager, please? So, and the minivan that has the little stickers with 22 children on it. And then when I take those, I see those vans with those that many stickers, all I can do is write in the dirt on the back window, get offer.
Karen's the type that orders steak, eats three quarters of it, and then sends it back.
And then complains to the manager. Yeah. So, and guys, wrestlers, if you want to work stiff, work with Karen, not with me. Okay. and then I've started the XF or the Extreme Fitness, my own line of supplements and fitness clothing, and I'm working on that. And. I've got the supplements are coming out and they'll be for up for sale soon at the xfbrand.com and the fitness wear will be out probably in February or March and they'll be out and up for sale and let's see what else. And I'll be working on a movie toward the middle of February out in L.A. I'm very excited about that. I get to do another film. I've done a bunch of movies.
Yep.
And if anybody wants to follow me and find out any more, they can follow me at The Real Al Snow on Instagram, The Real Al Snow on Facebook, and The Real Al Snow on Twitter. Because, yes, guys, there were some fake ones. And when I would find them, I would send them a message and go, okay, look, guys, if you're going to fake being a celebrity, set the bar higher. I mean, come on.
Well, I got to handle the real Leaf Cassidy, so.
Well, yeah, the real Leaf Cassidy. I haven't found too many of those things, so. Surprisingly.
Al, last question. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, with you doing independent wrestling now, and we're seeing such a huge growth with the different group. I mean, Cody Rhodes going out there and basically reinventing himself. Is it almost silly now for a young wrestler, their first thought being, I have to get to the WWE and not play around, for lack of a better term, more in the independents?
It is silly for a wrestler to first thought is, I have to get to WWE. Not because that's, you should want to go to WWE because it's the biggest platform,
right,
for you to be able to market you. You know, your, before it was even a brand, it was, you know, it was still, it was the same concept. You wanted to go to a place that you could, you know, get yourself out there. When we just had wrestling magazines, you know, you wanted to be in the magazine so that you could be seen by a bigger audience. So you should always aspire to be the WWE, but you should never pursue not even just wrestling, but anything, whether it be music or acting or sports or professional wrestling. You should do yourself a favor. Ask yourself, why am I doing this? If you're doing it just to get to WWE, then to be honest with yourself that you're doing it because you just really want to be famous. Mm. And you don't really have a passion for what it is you really want to do. And if you don't really have a passion for what you want to do, trust me, this business will crack you, will emotionally and mentally break you, and you'll give up. But if you have a passion, a real desire for what you want to do, you'll be successful. You may not make it to WWE, but you'll still be successful because you'll get to do what it is you love to do. And as long as you're able to do that, you're successful. If you're doing it just to be famous, you don't even know what purpose fame serves. Fame is nothing more than a tool. It's nothing more than an avenue to allow you to get more opportunities to make yourself more famous, to get more opportunities to make yourself more famous, to make more money, to make yourself more famous, to make more money.
Right.
That's it. You're nothing more than a product. You're peanut butter, and you've only got a certain amount of shelf life. So you got to get out there and you got to make yourself as famous as possible so that you can create an existing audience that you can then market your brand, which is you, so that you can now motivate people to pay to see you so you can make money and you can now get out of whatever it is you're doing on your terms. And that's the real success, is your ability to be able to stop it when you choose to do so.
Al, I want to thank you so much for giving us not only a couple minutes, a lot of minutes. Mm-hmm. It's fun for me. Like, this show has become this thing where I'm able to talk to people who had some sort of influence in my life at some point, and you were one of them. So I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
And good luck with everything you're going to do in the future and what you got going on. You're still a young dude. You got a lot of things ahead of you, and I can't wait to see where you end up.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, guys, you know, check out collarandelbowbrand.com. You know, I think you guys will think some stuff's cool. And, you know, follow me on the realalsnow.com. You know, realalsnow. You know, I don't just post wrestling stuff. I post a lot of goofy stuff, like dogs barking in the background.
Well, he's like the third member of the – he's really just asking you more questions. Al, thanks so much. Al,
I don't know if he knows anything about the business. I got to be honest with you.
I was going to say literally the exact same comment. Like, I don't think he's ever thought about business.
He just went in there like, I'll slam him.
I mean, there's a guy who's been around so long who's seen – ups and downs and ups and downs and ups and downs, yeah. Just in downs and like up. He's probably had to reinvent himself 7,000 times. He's probably sees these kids come up, like he's like, you don't know what's ahead of you.
Like,
you know,
he's literally been in the ring with the biggest names on earth, and he's been in the ring with like some 19-year-old kid. Is like, I think I want to do this. So it's just amazing his journey and his thoughts on everything about the business.
It's pretty fantastic. I mean, he just gave us an hour. A little over. he could probably go for another hour just telling us about the business. Mm-hmm. Like, and I have a ton more questions. I do hope we can get him on again because there's a lot more I'd like to ask him.
Exactly.
But let's take a break. All right, Berlo. I think it is guest time.
All right.
But so who we got today?
Her name is Ray Hulett Olson. She's a personal trainer, massage therapist, ski and snowboarding instructor. But you may remember her from American Gladiators under the code name Zap.
What would your gladiator name be?
Awesome.
Here's Awesome.
Well, the great thing is they would call me Awesome, and I would just lose every event. Like, the contestants would get, like, 50 points on every single thing.
Here's Awesome losing again.
It's the ironic American Gladiators.
Yes, yes. So, Ray Hulett, or Hulett? Hulett? Hulett?
We'll have to ask her.
We'll have to ask her. But let's give Zap a call.
Hi, this is Ray.
Hey, is this Ray? It's Scott and Mike from Verbal Shenanigans. How you doing?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you.
We're happy to have you on here. So, Ray, where are we calling you from right now?
Where are you calling me from? I don't know where you are.
Are you, I should say?
Okay, I'm in South Lake Tahoe.
Nice.
Very nice.
Yeah, we're
It's very, very nice.
Yeah, we're
in Jersey. We're less on the nice.
Yeah,
side.
We're in boring New Jersey at the moment, and all the time. But Ray, thanks for giving us a few minutes here. So Ray, let's start in the present and kind of go backwards. What, you know, post American Gladiators, a hit show, a show that still kind of, you know, has people us coming in trying to get an interview and. Where do you go after that? What are you doing currently?
I gave my shot at the acting after Gladiators. Some of the other gladiators got into real estate, owned their own like tanning salons. I kept up with the acting. I ended up on JAG. But that was a sad day because when I did the pilot, I got the role after I actually did Playboy test shots in 95. And then I got the role for JAG, and I was always known for my long blonde hair. And John Belisario asked me if I would cut my hair. And I didn't even blink. So I ended up, because I had to play a lieutenant. So I did. I chopped it all off. And then I get a phone call from Playboy. And it's a green light, 6-page pictorial, celebrity pictorial.
Right.
You know, I got paid a lot of money for that. And did the pilot, thinking, you know, oh, my gosh. This is awesome. I'm going to have another episodic underneath my belt. And I guess production companies switched, and they got rid of all of us. And they started anew with just David James Elliott. And they kept him, and the rest of us were like scratching our head going, wow, we really thought, you know, I thought I had another career. And that didn't happen. So, and being an actress doing, you know, one bit here, one role there, it really, after doing Gladiators for 7 years, man, the money, I mean, thank goodness I invested into it. I had a huge powerhouse gym in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Hold on. Sorry.
No
problem. So I did that. That was a great investment. And then I had a talent management company for actresses, actors, a lot of the gym people. And I had that for 7 years, but that just wasn't my cup of tea at all. And after I dissolved that, I decided You know what? I'm out of entertainment. I just don't want to deal with it anymore. So we moved to Tahoe. Anyway, how's New Jersey? You know I'm from Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, Wilkes-Barre. I used to work up there a lot. You frequent up there much, or that's just in your past?
In the past, after I got rid of my gyms. Two gyms, yeah. And then I had lost my parents in 2007. So there was no, then I just sold my gyms. There wasn't any reason to go back there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I haven't been back since.
Well, you're not missing much. I can't.
I got that.
Yeah.
So, and then Tahoe, it's so funny because you know where Harvey's Lake is in Pennsylvania?
Somewhat, yeah.
Okay, well, it's outside of Wilkes-Barre.
Mm-hmm.
When I came up and over, I'd never been to Tahoe. When we came up and over the hill, they say, I fell in love as soon as I saw the lake because I was brought up on a lake in Pennsylvania. And there's four casinos a mile from where we live, and one's called Harvey's on the lake. How weird is that? That was pretty coincidental. I liked it.
Mm.
So, here we are. And I actually asked what I'm doing. Up here, I teach snowboarding and skiing.
Oh, very nice.
During the winter, yeah.
Now, do you shoot tennis ball guns at them as they learn to try to get them to turn quicker and whatnot?
I use tennis balls all the time. Yeah, right. To throw them out. Snowballs, tennis balls, you know, whatever gets the attention.
Now, before American Gladiators, you were a female bodybuilder. Now, did you always have a goal to get into that, or were you just very athletic and kind of lean towards going into that sport?
No, it all started pretty much with Arnold back in the day. Because I left Pennsylvania, I was always an athlete, but I started lifting weights because I was really thin, but still athletic. And I actually got a one-way ticket to Los Angeles, Venice Beach, the mecca of bodybuilding. And as soon as I got off the plane, that was done. I mean, that was my home. I went to Gold's, and then looking at every idol from the magazines to the women competitors, they were all in the gym. And I just hung out with the right people and, you know, ended up winning shows and moving forward and powerlifted and did strength shows in New Jersey. I did a lot of those.
Now, all right, let's talk about Gladiators for a minute. So you obviously get yourself in impeccable shape and whatnot. Now, when this show is coming around and the idea is pitched to you, or how did you get involved in that? Did they tell you, like, okay, you're going to be a gladiator, or did they give you a test run? And did they say come up with a name? Did they give you? Give us a little insight to the start of that show.
Johnny Ferraro is the creator. He was from Ohio, and he came up with the idea of, you know, American heroes against just contenders, other athletes. And they didn't know what to do with the show. There were six characters: Nitro, Gemini, Malibu, Lace, Sunny, and Zap.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they held auditions for both, for athletes who were also actors, if that makes sense. Because
mm-hmm.
you can't just be an athlete. You kind of have to be able to entertain. That's why Nitro was a football player, Laser, you know, another pro football player, because they're entertainers as well. And then Johnny's father was a huge fan of me from the bodybuilding days. He had a picture of me on their garage door, and he told Johnny he wants me on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And they contacted me, came pick me up in a limo, and made me say some stuff on television that was they put me on video back then. And I was Zap. I fit that description. I wasn't, Sonny was tall, you know, 6'2", very, you know, cute and bright. And Zap was very dangerous, got in like lightning, caused a ton of damage, and then bolted out.
Right.
Yeah. And I fit that. So that was it. And nobody knew. We had no idea what we were in for at all. And then year after year, they would, like Malibu got you know, kicked himself in the face on Human Cannonball. So he was out. So they had to audition for other people. Ice came. I got pregnant in the third season. And she was a friend, bodybuilder. And the people after us got to pick their own names. Hmm. There were only six people who...
So you were actually like cast as like a... Like they had the character in mind first.
Almost like wrestling.
Yeah, yeah. So they had the character in mind and they said, okay, you're perfect for this character?
Like Nitro auditioned for Nitro.
Right.
Malibu with his hair and his, hey, dude.
Yep.
That worked for him, so he auditioned for that. But after that first season and when we got picked up, when they were going through the audition process, they were, you know, sitting down with people who wanted to be a gladiator, not a contender, a gladiator. And I said, what character do you see yourself as? So, like, Siren made a lot of sense. Siren was actually one of our girls who was deaf on the show. Mm. Yeah, go figure.
Mm. So, how much practice would you say you got in these events before they started taping and doing competitions? And were these competitors coming in, were they like psyched and like talking trash and stuff to you guys, or did that come later?
That didn't come till probably the third year, because it takes some time to get the audience. But in the beginning... See, I got smart about learning the games. I would practice. I mean, I actually practiced with a wrestling with a kid who was a national champion wrestler, and we would go at it. And he'd show me, you know, how the moves, how to get low, the grappling part of it. On the rings, every time they showed us a new event that we had to do, I'd go figure out how to do it better. The other people, the other gladiators, they just didn't. Don't know why, but they didn't. Like that wall, climbing the wall, I actually went to a place where they had the wall, and that was my best event. The rings, incredible, because I lived a mile away from Santa Monica, and mm-hmm. we have those rings mm. on the beach. So I'd be down there, you know, getting my hands ready, you know, because I knew after a while, after the second year, when you knew, uh-oh, this thing is going to be big, you know, I don't want to look like an idiot on TV. So there you go. The tennis ball thingy,
that looked so
not
fun.
Not so much.
That always looked so fun. That was like a dream of a kid to like, that's what I want to do. I want to get on the tennis ball one. But
Assault. That's right. What it's called.
Now, when did you start realizing, like, hey, this show's starting to take off, and, you know, you went from, like you said, six characters to more. When did you go, okay, this isn't just some guy's idea, to, hey, this thing's got some lasting power?
Definitely the third year, especially because we were contracted. Gladiators were a revolving door. There were only maybe four that people will remember. But if you weren't doing the job, there was somebody else right behind you going to step right in. But it became like a family. It was a six of us in the beginning, and then the second year turned to eight. The only problem with that show and why they lost it is because of it kept changing hands. Mm. Like from one producer to another production company, and then like the new one. Did you see the new Gladiator?
Yeah.
That they came out with?
Yeah.
I mean, we were there, Nitro and I, you know, thought, wow, what a crazy idea that he and I could actually do the commenting. It would be smart to stick, you know, it could have been Ice, it could have been Gemini, it could have been any of the other gladiators, but that as soon as they put Hulk Hogan in there, and I mean, Terry's an awesome man, and so is what's her name, Layla, Ali.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as they put them two in there, it didn't work. It became, and everybody said the same thing. Instead of competition, one on one, it became. I mean, they're giving the girls wings in the back, and here's Falcon, whatever. I mean, you don't do that. So that took away from the authenticity of the show.
Yeah, it's funny. You would think, like, if they did that show right, it would have a chance, because you do see shows like that, American Ninja Warrior, and there's one on Netflix. I forget what it is, the Monster or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them.
Steve Austin's got one out there.
Even that one with the balloon, the water one, where they jumped on the, like, this.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of these type of challenge type shows. So I feel like if they did it right, it would have had a chance. But obviously they went for, like, the gimmick part, and I think that's what made it fall apart.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. And they had American Ninja Warrior down in Venice. They set up the whole course. That is, I'm telling you, I don't think any of our gladiators
it's amazing.
would be able to do that. I'm telling you, I'm looking at these people going, oh my God. The only big, huge difference was they don't go against people.
Yes.
So there's nobody coming after you and taking you out. Whereas, you know, American Ninja Warrior, you know, climbing on your own and whatnot. But I will tell you your other question. When you said, when did you guys really know? When we went on tour. I was watching the Grammys last night, and I went out in the middle of Madison Square Garden with my kid above my head because she was one. And I just held her up there and walked out and got introduced because we did a 100-city tour across the country, which was brutal.
How many cities?
100. We started in Maine.
Wow.
Yeah, and we went all the way down through Florida, all the way to Texas, and back up again through L.A. And I'm telling you, we're going every single night on these games. Yes, we're experienced about it, but, I mean, we're on a bus, and then we got to get off, and then these people are, like, they see on television, and they don't realize we're all so injured. Every single one of us.
Right.
Mm. Night after night of aches and pains and fresh faces going, oh my gosh, this one wants to take me out. Jesus. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's when a show like American Ninja Warrior, right, it's just on that contestant. Like, there's no staff that you're worrying about. Like, I'm sure you guys, like you said, with the aches and pains and you got to be up for that challenge every week and whatnot. Now, how many episodes would be in, like, one season of filming?
See, here's where people don't get it, because if you're not in television, you don't understand how it's shot. So if you think of this, like the tennis ball thing, assault, that had to be set up. So we would do that game in the morning,
right?
Break for lunch. They would break it down and then put up the rings. Another thing people don't understand is, you know, assault wasn't physical for us. That was kind of a joke, honestly. Everybody remembers that, but that was our, like, oh, thank God I got the ball thing. All I got to do is wave and look cute with my sunglasses on. Seriously. But we would shoot. We would, like, okay, let's say the joust. I would be jousting six times.
Wow.
Six times. And that was my huge, I had a huge problem because after the third girl, like, the first girl would get the crap beat out of her, but you wouldn't know that. because the second girl I have to go up against again, and that's show one, and then show two is the third girl, and then so on and so forth. By the time the sixth girl came, she's the winner. I'm exhausted. Hmm. By the time I got to four, five, and six, you're tired of holding that jousting stick. It gets heavy.
Yep.
And yeah, so it's the same thing like with the wall going up six times. Breakthrough and Conquer, that was the hardest by far. By far, because we're going, you know, you're throwing people around on carpeting. We weren't on mats.
Oh, that was like the football one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where you're picking people up and throwing them down on the ground, knocking the wind out of them with no pads.
Oof.
Yeah.
Now, with all that punishment you're telling us, and it sounds incredibly grueling, you took, like you said, you took a break for your pregnancy. Out of curiosity, what was there any thought about, I'm going to have this child, I'm not coming back, or were you just determined to go back to the show?
And was there ever any thought of you being the first mother-daughter gladiators?
Yeah. That's funny, guys. Okay. No. I never left the show. I was pregnant when I was, and I didn't tell them. I was pregnant when I was doing the show. We only did the show for 6 weeks, so you guys do the math. I was literally jousting 4 months pregnant.
Wow.
Yeah. But you couldn't see me. I had abs when I was pregnant. I did. Anyway. And then after we finished, I told them after we finished shooting that season, which was episode 2, I believe, I packed it up and went to Pennsylvania and opened up my powerhouse while I was pregnant. And then as soon as I was, you know, had the baby, came back to LA and did the next season. So I didn't take any seasons off at all.
Oh, wow. Now, as you were doing the show, you're also doing a ton of acting. I mean, what was, did the acting come from the exposure on the show, or were you getting into it and then kind of had the balance between the two?
The whole bodybuilding career lasted 11 years. And then there was, at Gold's Gym, they put up, and they still do it, casting calls, looking for a very muscular female bodybuilder who still is feminine looking. And I never, you know, got into the heavy steroids. So I ended up going to this audition for Skin Deep, which was with John Ritter. It was a Blake Edwards movie. And that's really what grabbed the attention of the creator of Gladiators. Because I was, back then, I was pretty big. I was about 180 when I did that movie. But with clothes on, you wouldn't know. As soon as I took my clothes off and we did a love scene, then his tagline at the end is, he's in bed waiting for me, and he goes, I feel like Mrs. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What?
Yeah.
I remember that. I actually remember that.
And it was on the trailer at all the movie theaters for the trailer. So, yeah, it just blew me up. I wasn't an actress. I was working in a law firm.
Right.
Yeah, so I went in. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to read lines. I didn't know who Blake Edwards was, quite frankly. So I had no, like, intimidation factor happening. I didn't know. I just read off the, you know, the paper.
Law.
And then he asked me to strip down, and I had a competitive suit on, and that was it. It was bam, just like that, yeah. And then so I quit the law firm, and I started acting, yeah.
Well, Ray, it's amazing. Like, law firm, actor, gladiator, snowboard instructor, you know, bodybuilder. It's cool to see that you've been able to kind of reinvent yourself in multiple different ways, being on a show that still holds, like, you know, guys my age still holds a place in their heart. Like, you know, I remember watching it every Saturday morning. and being excited for it. So it's pretty cool that you've contributed to a bunch of different things.
Thank you.
Oh, no problem. If people want to go check you out, where can they go? And also, what are you up to nowadays?
Since being up here in Tahoe, I have no stress whatsoever. I can tell you that.
Nice.
We live in paradise. Yeah. I got married in October up here.
Congrats.
All my cronies. Yeah, all the cronies, thank you, came up from L.A. and all over the country to this wedding. It was just fabulous. Going into I went to Heavenly. How I got the job being a snowboarder instructor, I have no idea. It's because let me tell you why. Because the guy who hired me was a huge fan. He didn't even know if I can snowboard. I'm looking at him going, he's like, he goes, okay, go get suited up, get your uniform, and we'll get y'all. I'm thinking, you don't even know if I can put the thing on. And but I guess because of, you know, it kind of carries a lot of weight doing that show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I can't believe it. I mean, and now I'm doing ski instruction up here too. But I also do personal training up here in South Lake Tahoe. That is what I do. I'm a massage therapist. That's
another
thing. I am. I'm really good at it because I know the body. You know that.
Yes.
Ooh. I know bodies. Yeah.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for giving us a couple minutes on the show. And
you guys are awesome.
Thank you. And good luck with everything you got going on in the future. And yeah, enjoy stress-free Tahoe while we're in crappy, stressful Jersey. So thanks a lot. Zap.
Yeah. Good to see she's out of that whole war zone.
I think if I was a gladiator, I'd be like Ginger Fury.
Ginger Fury? You'd be the first two named American.
Exactly.
Gladiator.
You know, you got to push
the
it
guy's into- so insane. We told him just say Fury. He's like, no, man. I'm Ginger Fury.
When I did backyard wrestling as a kid, I was Rampage. That was my wrestling name.
It kind of makes sense what she said, because I remember like Malibu was like really, you know, hamming it up. Whoa, these incredible waves, man. I can't wait to get to the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, cool interview. Let's take a break. Wrestlers, gladiators, making me feel like what I do at the gym is just not enough.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. They're not going to invite you back to be Lake Patrol. You need to be stronger for that.
Lake Patrol.
Lake Patrol.
The Lake Patrol workout. It's funny. I have these guys at work, like, they talk about the gym all the time. It makes me feel so awkward. Like, I've been going, like, I don't like talking about working out or anything like that. I feel like the gym should be, like, once you're over the age of, like, 24... Like, you're in, you're out, you don't talk about it. You're just trying to maintain not being fat. That's all you're trying to do.
Yeah, unless you're doing it to make a career of some sort, there's no reason to have a conversation specifically.
Listen, I'm not doing a career switch to bodybuilder. I'm not going.
No?
No. Not yet. No, it hasn't come to me yet. But I like to go in, do my thing, and get the hell out of there. Like, I don't talk about it. I don't talk to anyone while I'm there. These guys go, and it's like a social, like... Oh, they talk and they film videos together. It's weird.
Yesterday was pec day, you know. I had to do 50 quads, you know what I mean, man? Yeah.
Well, I mean, anyway, before we get out of here, bro, what do you got? You have a cup in front of me.
Yeah. I was...
If this is piss, I'm going to be real mad.
There's no drug tests on the Verbal Shenanigans podcast?
Drug test us.
Well, I was in the liquor store, and I was...
Shocking.
I was viewing over the selections, and I came across something, and I say to myself, I just ask myself, why do people want to drink this?
What's coming to my mind is Clamato. Is that what you have?
Bud Light,
I swear,
and Clamato.
I swear on my life I did not peek in the bag. I did not. Mm-hmm. I did not look at this. We didn't plan this bit. One time we were in the liquor store a long, long time ago, me and my buddies, and we found that. And the same reaction. Why on earth would anybody try this? It's Budweiser and tomato juice?
Budweiser and Clamato. Now, Clamato, it's not just tomato juice. Clamato is a commercial drink made of reconstituted tomato juice concentrate, sugar, flavored with spices, and clam broth.
Yeah. It's funny. It was always funny to me that this existed because... Like, why Budweiser would put something like clam broth into anything? It doesn't seem like a very, like, mass marketable kind of thing. It doesn't seem like seafood would ever be cheap or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It seems weird.
And then kind of add to it, I think Clamato is made by Mott's or something. So two executives from $2 billion companies actually came together one day and said, this is going to happen. Yeah. This is going to be the partnership to end all partnerships.
I'm so, very upset I have to try this again.
Yeah, so we're going to have to try it out and see
what see happens. How it is. All right. So let's see. I'll take a picture of you. Now it's pouring a very red color. And fill your glass. Fill your glass. Don't fill only mine.
Well, we're going to do both.
It's a pretty color. It looks like a red.
Like a red mimosa.
Mimosa.
Yeah.
Mimoso. No.
A male, so I make it masculine with the O instead of the A.
Yeah. Mimoso. All right.
Let's see if it's about
even. You're a little. No, you're good. That's fine. No!
There's a little bit left in there.
I don't want this. All right. So we're going to take our taste of Clamato. Now, bro, I think is there anything else besides trying this we're doing here, or?
No, I just figure we'll kind of note it on, I'll put it on Untappd, and no, I won't, I'll tell people on Untappd to join Verbal Shenanigans to find out the results. I won't even give it a score. It could be a 5. You never know.
All right. So I guess why we're doing this, Berlo, is there anything you want to promote before you taste this and die?
I'm trying to think.
It smells like Bloody Mary, basically.
Yeah, it's very tomato-y, and I'm not good with tomato juice, so I'm going to have to think about who I'm going to promote tonight.
Promote Randy.
Yeah, we'll do foodchallenges.com, Randy Santel.
Oh, he's going to be on next week.
He will be on next week, so we're going to promote, see it next week and all, as we're doing our food challenge right now.
Yeah, so he, Randy Santel,
foodchallenges.com or on youtube.com/Randy Santel.
So I just took a sip. It's like Bloody Mary, but cheap at the same time.
It's like I'm drinking Manhattan clam chowder.
Right. There's a seafoodiness to it.
Who wants to drink seafood? I don't. Why?
Like, this tastes like if you ever got sick and like threw up like calamari or something like that.
Yeah, it's like with the carbonation to it.
I'm taking a second sip. And it's absolutely.
Oh my God.
Why? It's absolutely disgusting.
And this comes in a 25 ounce, you know, beer can. I mean, this isn't like, oh, okay, I can shotgun this and I'll be done. You're going to be sipping on that for a while.
Yeah, that is horrendous. I don't think I could do much more of that. But I'm going to. I want to promote two things.
Oh,
that's really terrible, Berlo. Way to.
This is a great way to end the show.
Yeah, I was way to end it. We can't even talk.
Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Oh, what is that?
So I want to promote. We have joined a podcast network, Berlo. We have joined a podcast
network. The Clamato Podcast?
You could start your own. It's the Clamato Cast. It's only the cast is only as long as it takes to drink one full can of Clamato.
So it's 6 hours. Oh my God!
So we've joined the BS Podcast Network. We're very excited about it. We are surrounded by many, many interesting podcasts. It's a network that helps us get out there, and also surrounded by a lot of podcasts. So I would go check out the BS Podcast. They're on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. So we are now part of that network, okay, which is awesome. And I would also like to promote the February 22nd Verbal Shenanigans comedy show at Tap House 15, and it is a good one with my good friend Kevin Israel, Joanne Filon, Joe McAndrew, and Grisel Cabrera. So a lot of good comics.
That lineup is more tasty than this beer.
We really gave them a lot of credit there.
Yeah. You think it would have been better if I got Bud Light and Clamato?
Yeah. But again, I want to thank Al Snow for coming on today. I want to thank Zap or Ray Hullett for coming on today. It's been a great episode. Guys, keep listening to the podcast. Keep sharing. Keep subscribing. Listening. All that fun stuff. We're always here, so send us a little tweet on what you want to hear, who you want to hear.
Do you want us to drink more Clamato?
Dude, I'm going to puke. All right. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Berloom, you're an asshole. This is disgusting.
That's why I give to the podcast.
Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I'll keep on bum bam. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somebody out of the lane. I'll keep on bum bam. Informer, you know, say that I'm a stormy, I go blam. I'll keep on bum bam. Take the man that says that I'm a stormy, stab somebody out of the lane. I'll keep on bum bam. He said I'm gonna come in and they blow down my door. Rain me car through my window, so they put me in the back of the car at the station. From that point on, I reached my destination. Where the destination region out of east attention. Where the look down my pants, look up my bottom. So informer, you know, say that I'm a snowman, I go glam. I keep on bum down. Take the man that says that I'm a snowman, stop somewhere down the lane.
Remember that song by Snow?